Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Elizabeth Baugh recently received the King Charles III Coronation Medal. In this interview, she will be joined by Alicia Van Dyne, Executive Director of the Northumberland United Way. Together, they will share an amazing story about this Colborne resident and her contribution to Northumberland, Canada, and the world. Have a listen. I'm absolutely thrilled to have with me today Elizabeth Baugh, the recipient of the King Charles III Coronation Medal, and Alicia Van Dyne, Executive Director of the Northumberland United Way. Welcome both to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Robert, for having us.
Thank you so much, Robert.
I'd like to start with you, Alicia. What is the King Charles III Coronation Medal?
The Coronation Medal was created to commemorate His Majesty's coronation on May the 6th, 2023. And it's designed to recognize individuals who have made a significant contribution to Canada, their community, or have achieved outstanding accomplishments abroad.
Now, who nominated Elizabeth?
Each of our United Ways across the country, 87 of us to be exact, were asked to nominate a local person to receive on behalf of the United Way, and a total of 30,000 medals were awarded, of which United Way was able to influence 87 of them.
Why did you nominate Elizabeth?
Well, quite simply, Elizabeth is a not-for-profit legend. And I know that will make her blush. And fortunately for your listeners, they won't see that, of course. But she has been so involved in the development of the healthcare sector in particular, with several organizations that I know that she will talk to you about specifically. But it is her work in that sector that has really set her apart. And we're just so honored to have her skills sitting as a board member of our current United Way board.
Elizabeth, I'd like to learn some more about you. First of all, before we get into that stuff, how did you hear about winning the medal?
Oh, Alicia called me and told me on the phone. I had heard of a number of people being awarded them, you know, friends I saw on social media, etc. And I knew that I had been nominated because they asked me for my bio. But so I just thought, oh, well, you know, didn't make it this time. And then Alicia called and said that I had been awarded. I was thrilled, simply thrilled. I was raised in a family where both of my grandfathers were from England, and we really respected and loved the monarchy. And I know that that's not, you know, so common now, but in the 50s, it was very common. And so it just meant so much to me to receive this award.
Who is the first person you shared the news with?
My children. I sent them an email and told my four children.
And what did they say back?
Oh, thrilled, Mom. Good for you, Mom. Well done, Mom. They're a very supportive team.
What does it mean to you to be honored in this way?
Well, it's just, I feel it validates hard work. But I, you know, I do have to say that I don't feel like I received this medal alone. There were so many people who helped me, who worked with me, who had the courage to speak out about their own situations, that supported the causes I was working in. So it's really, I felt that when I received the medal, I was surrounded by all of those people and my global colleagues who helped me with the global work we've done, that really it was recognition for all of us.
Have you ever received recognition for your work before this?
I have. I've received the Order of Ontario, and I received the Queen's Jubilee Medal.
Now, are you from Northumberland?
I'm not. I grew up in Montreal. Raised, went to university in the Eastern Townships, raised my children in Niagara-on-the-Lake, and then moved to Toronto and came out here about 12 years ago.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about when you were growing up, but what aspect of your life indicated that you would follow the path that led you to this honor?
Well, nothing I could think of at the time. I thought that I would perhaps be a librarian. But I got married young and had four children after university and was raising my children. And I had, just to give some background, I was born with a facial defect that was not correctable surgically. And it affects the right side of my face and the inside of my mouth. And it's very uncommon, very, very uncommon. And it just wasn't something that could be corrected successfully surgically. So when I had my four children, though, it grew much worse. It's blood vessels, etc. And I was choking on food. I was having trouble eating. My appearance was very affected, but it was more function that I was worried about. And I happened to read in Reader's Digest about an architect of the face in Toronto. I was living in Niagara. I had been trying to find help, and there were dead ends everywhere. So I called this architect of the face, who was a craniofacial surgeon in Toronto. I got an appointment right away and had very successful surgery subsequently. But going through that process, I had to be assessed by a full multidisciplinary team. And when I met the psychiatrist on the team, she said, "It's kind of unusual that you've had the life you've had. You're president of the nursery school, you sing in the choir, you're married, you have four children. Many people who have facial differences are not as successful. It would be so helpful if you could share your experience with other people." Well, I'd never talked to anybody else about my difference. Not because I didn't want to, I just never met anybody. It just was, this is who I was. My family accepted me, my friends knew me. It wasn't a big deal. But she began introducing me to patients at the hospital, teenagers and parents. And I realized that I knew exactly why the children were upset, why the mothers and fathers were urging them on. I had lived this. And just because I lived it, I knew stuff. So I met another woman who was an adoptive mother of some children who had difficulties. And she was a nurse. And together we founded About Face, which was a support group for people with facial differences, originally for those born with them, because that was my experience and hers with her children. But we realized quickly that it isn't how you got it that matters, it's how you're living with it. So we soon had people coming with facial differences because of cancer, because of an accident, etc. And I was there at that organization for 10 years.
This is not something most people have heard of before. Can you give us some idea, the scope, the numbers of people that this impacts across Canada?
Well, it's very, very hard because there are the clinical diagnosed conditions. So those have a finite number, but there's many. Cleft lip and palate would be the most common one. And I think the incidence is about 2,000 a year. I'm not sure in Canada. I'm not certain now. A bit rusty on that. But it's really how you identify. So if your appearance has changed because you've had an accident, and you don't feel like you looked before, if you feel that people are treating you differently because of how you look, then it's really self-identification as well as many conditions that do give one a very different appearance. So it's very hard to put a number on it.
Before your organization, what was it like for people who had facial differences?
Well, there's a lot of assumptions and stigma that went along with it. You know, the face is the mirror of the soul. And so people, I my own self experienced people, I could tell they thought, "Oh my gosh, she's the next one in line to pay for her purchases. Is she going to be able to make change? Will she be able to speak properly?" People make assumptions about your level of function, intelligence, etc. And mostly people are very curious And in my case, because my condition looks like a bruise or a fall or wisdom teeth, I get a lot of sympathy around, oh gosh, what happened? I hope that'll be better soon. And it's always well-meaning, always well-meaning. So one of the missions of the organization was to try to destigmatize that, teach children that curiosity is good, but to ask appropriately, and to take away the teasing and bullying that were so common previously.
How does your organization then help these people? I mean, I understand the educational aspect that you're talking about. Could you dig in a little deeper and tell us exactly what the organization does to help people and to help us as a public?
Well, one of the first things is helping parents get information about some of the rare conditions that kids are born with, because, you know, certainly when the organization was founded in 1985, I had parents saying to me that the doctor delivered the baby and ran to the medical library and couldn't find anything for me. So we built a real library of information about these syndromes, about how they could be helped, et cetera, particularly the more rare ones. And then giving parents support, because it's so hard. The first thing when someone sees you pushing a buggy is to peek in and see that beautiful baby. And if the baby looks different, that can be very hard. What does one say? How does the parent handle it? So putting parents in touch with each other for support. And then when the child goes to school, helping them integrate. We had a school program where we talked to kids about why people look different. You know, we went into schools when a child was starting school, and now they've expanded their programs. They have a wonderful camp program because the teen years can be very hard. And again, now I'm speaking about children born with defects and not something acquired later from a disease for an adult. But there are networks for adults so they can talk to each other. As I said, summer camps for teens who, you know, for the first time, they can talk really about how they feel to someone else who knows exactly how it feels. And they've one of their more recent programs I just think is so spectacular is a training program for human resource professionals so that they understand and are sensitive to the difference and how to handle it appropriately and sensitively. So
can you describe the advocacy work that you do?
Well, I haven't been involved with About Face directly since, you know, probably 2000. I've been strongly working in ovarian cancer, where I went to be the executive director, then the CEO in 1997. And the advocacy work we did there was for improved treatments for women with ovarian cancer, to get treatment and to fund research for improved knowledge.
I'd like to come back to that in a moment. I'd like to just finish off with About Face, because I was wondering if you could just share maybe one or two stories about the people that you help.
I have one story I love. So a mother called me, and she just had her baby at Scarborough General. And she said, the doctor said it's a condition called Treacher-Collins, which means under development of the cheekbones and the outer ears can be not properly formed or missing. And she said, they don't know anything about it. Can you help me? So we had a booklet we were able to provide her. I was able to put her in touch with a couple of other parents elsewhere in Canada, because these things are rare. There's not usually someone in your neighborhood you can speak to. And she stayed in touch when that little boy started school. We helped him get into school. He is now a researcher at the Hospital for Sick Children. He's an accomplished pianist, and he recently stepped down as chair of the board of About Face. He's a remarkable man, and I saw him a few years ago. The organization's 40 years old now, so I had the privilege of seeing him before the pandemic at an event, and I just saw his mom. We hugged and hugged. And to see how well he has done and overcome his difference to be a real champion and a star, it just made my heart so warm.
I'd like now to come back to the work that you do for ovarian cancer. Can you tell us about this work? What is it that you do?
So I was hired by a gentleman who was starting an organization in 1997 in memory of his wife, who had passed away from ovarian cancer. She was a very strong women's health advocate, and when got her own diagnosis, devastated at the lack of information and knowledge and that the treatments hadn't changed in 40 years. So he and I got together. I didn't know anything about ovarian cancer, but I knew how to start an organization. And so that was in 1997. As we grew the organization, we reached out to women. We found women who had the disease. We gave them support and information. We began trying to raise awareness about the disease because there is no test, no early detection. So it's most often diagnosed in late stage and has very poor outcome. Fortunately, in the 25 years I was there, that has changed. There are more treatments. There is greater awareness among women about the disease. But really our vision was that all women who are diagnosed would have the chance of the best possible life. And in the success that we had, and I saw my colleagues in the U.S. having success in Australia, in the U.K. So in 2012, I put up my hand in a room and said that I would organize a World Ovarian Cancer Day. My team were a bit surprised that I thought we could do it, but I knew we would know people who would help us, and we did. And so we started World Ovarian Cancer Day then, and in 2016, we founded the World Ovarian Cancer Coalition, because we knew that the success of the day, we were reaching millions and millions of people on May 8th around the globe, but it's not just one day. Women needed help all year round, and so many parts of the world, there was just substandard care available. So we wanted to see what we could do to improve that.
Do you happen to know any numbers for the number of people that get ovarian cancer in Canada, just so that we have an idea of how serious a problem this is?
Yeah, I believe in Canada now the number's about 3,000. But it is the most deadly women's cancer because of the lack of early detection and because the signs and symptoms mimic the signs and symptoms of menopause, much more common things that aren't serious. And so they're often overlooked and put on the back burner while you take care of your family.
People aren't going to believe this, but I also understand that you teach.
Well, yes.
Like, do you sleep? Yeah.
As I was just before I retired, my friends were teaching in a diploma course at the School for Continuing Studies at the University of Toronto. And it's a diploma nonprofit certificate in leadership change strategy. And there are three courses. And one day my friend said, "Would you like to co-teach with me this semester?" And I said, "I would like to." And that got me in the door. And I continued to co-teach. And then a few years ago, I was asked to teach one of the courses. One of the instructors left, and I was asked to teach a course on enhancing the impact of your nonprofit. And we had the chance to redesign the curriculum and refresh it. That was very exciting, big learning curve for me. And I teach a semester of that about twice a year. And it's incredibly rewarding to see the young professionals coming up and learn about all of the work being done across the country in every sector: environment, health, children, poverty, homelessness. The work is incredible and the passion is so deep for making a difference.
Alicia has already in our conversation alluded to the fact that you sit on the board of directors for Northumberland Way. How long have you been doing that?
I'm just finishing my first term, my second year. And I thought in my retirement that I wanted to give back to the community I lived in. I didn't know Northumberland County that well, because while I lived here, I was commuting to Toronto and traveling around the world on work all the time. So I thought that the United Way would be a good organization to understand all the needs of the county and figure out where the best fit was. And I've really enjoyed the work with this group.
Alicia, I'd like to bring you back into the conversation now. Can you talk about the presentation?
Yeah, it would be my honor. We had a Community Matters event. It was co-hosted by the Northumberland Legal Center, where we gathered together just over 100 not-for-profit professionals to talk about what does poverty look like in Northumberland County, taking stock, and how do we move the needle? And so in the morning session, we had a panel discussion on homelessness, unhomed, precarious houses. The panelists really talked about the work that they were doing in Northumberland County. And after the panel was done, we asked everyone to gather around tables to talk about what other services that they knew of that were happening, taking some of the inspiration from those panelists, and really having a good conversation about what strategies could we do working together to defeat homelessness. In the afternoon, we talked in more general poverty terms, things like food insecurity. How does transportation factor in, especially for our rural communities? And so in the middle of that, during the lunchtime, I just thought it was so important to present Elizabeth with her medal, because really it was 100 of her peers and co-professionals. And it was, to me, it was just so fitting to recognize all of her efforts in our healthcare sector during a very special time. This is the first time that United Way has done this kind of convening of professionals for quite a while. Certainly before COVID would be the last time. And we just thought this was such an amazing opportunity to bring together not only professionals, we brought together some municipal leaders as well. And what an opportunity to present the King Charles Medal to a lovely group of people so that they knew of the work that Elizabeth was doing, and it was global work.
Is there a formal presentation hosted by the Governor General as well?
There is, and the United Way was asked to make their own presentations in their own communities because they felt that the nominations were coming from the community, that they would prefer the medal presentation to have more of a community feel. And so I was honored to be able to present the medal on behalf of the Governor General.
Elizabeth, when presented, what was that like?
Oh, it was very moving. As soon as Alicia called me up, everyone rose to their feet for a standing ovation. So I was quite shaky by the time I got to the podium, which I hadn't expected. This is the room of peers. It's a lovely moment. I was moved, but I didn't think I would get shaky and almost weepy, but I really did. It was very, very moving. And then to see my couple of my kids were busy and weren't able to watch, but my oldest grandchild, my granddaughter's at university in Ottawa at Carleton, and there she was on the Zoom screen smiling away, her eyes shining with tears. She was so proud of me, and that just meant the world to me.
Have you worn it yet?
I haven't. It's quite large. So it's quite a statement. I'll just show you. I know that your listeners can't see it, but I haven't had the opportunity yet to wear it.
So,
but
so
there are instructions about where it goes.
Oh, I was just going to say, where do you keep it? Do you display it? Do you keep it somewhere else?
Well, I was thinking that I should get a shadow box and put it in a shadow box maybe and have it on the wall. I was thinking about that the other day, that would be nice to have it up there to think about it.
So what's next for you, Elizabeth?
Well, I'm looking forward to another term on the United Way board. I'm going to, I think, be brave and step into the role of treasurer. Not a role I've done on a board before, but I think there's great support on the team and I have wonderful mentors. So I'm looking forward to watching Alicia take the organization to the next level and supporting her in that work.
Elizabeth Baugh, Alicia Van Dyne, thank you so much for talking to me today. That was Elizabeth Baugh, recipient of the King Charles III Coronation Medal, and Alicia Van Dyne, Executive Director of the Northumberland United Way. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.